Good afternoon. I'm Vance Pace, and I'm happy to be here to introduce my brother-in-law, Taylor Hollis. J. Taylor Hollis' academic training took place at Weber College, Utah State University, and the University of Utah. He graduated from Utah State with a Bachelor of Science degree in mathematics and got an MS Master of Science and did doctoral work at U. His specialty was geometry. On completing his coursework, he was hired as an instructor at Oklahoma State College. Actually, it's the State University of Oneonta, where he taught for 37 years. He wrote several articles on the Dutch artist M.S. Escher and was invited to give a paper on Escher and Cornelius Roosevelt in Rome in 1998. Cornelius Roosevelt was Escher's agent and the grandson of Theodore Roosevelt. Taylor and his wife, the former Suzanne Parker, live almost literally on the banks of the Susquehanna River in Oneonta. Somebody asked Taylor where Oneonta is. It's actually the center of the universe, almost. Not quite. It's the center of New York State, however. Right in the center of the state. Much of his historical research was done about Joseph Smith's experiences there. Most of Smith's romantic involvement with Emma took place on the Susquehanna, and they were married in South Bainbridge, not far from Taylor's home in Oneonta. I might just tell a story about Taylor, one of Taylor's experiences in Oneonta. He got a telephone call from church security, and they said that President Luckdorf was going to be at Harmony, now Oakland, Pennsylvania, and he needed somebody to show him around who really knew what things were, what things were happening there. But he couldn't tell anybody. And Taylor says, "Well, I got to tell my wife." And they says, "Okay, you tell your wife, don't tell anybody else." So Taylor and Susie met the Luckdorfs and their twin grandsons, going on a mission there and showed them around and had a marvelous time, which tells me that Susie probably knows more about what's right than church security. In Oneonta, Taylor discovered various folk stories about Joseph Smith walking on water, walking on the Susquehanna. This led to an article published in Mormon Historical Studies. While serving a mission with Suzanne in Nauvoo from 2005-2006, Taylor became aware of the contributions of the eccentric philanthropist Wilford Wood to the acquisition of early church properties. As Taylor will probably tell you, Wood's acquisition and subsequent sale of the Nauvoo Temple lot was an essential element without which the Nauvoo Temple would not exist today. Nothing necessarily eccentric here, but eccentricity may really be an understatement. I'll leave the eccentricities of Wilford Wood to Taylor. Some of them may make you smile. So it is my privilege now to present to you J. Taylor Hollis. Thank you.
Thank you. I suppose that's working here. Wilford Wood was born in 1893 in Woods Cross, Utah, and he died in 1968 in a Salt Lake City hospital. His obituary said he was 74 years old when he died, and he died of natural causes. That he was a longtime Davis County furrier and collector of historical items. And he was survived by his widow, two daughters, nine grandchildren, four sisters, four brothers. A graveside service was held at a Bountiful, Utah city cemetery. As a retired mathematics professor, I know the term eccentricity is a measure of how far an ellipse deviates from being a circle. A circle has eccentricity zero. The eccentricity for an ellipse is a number greater than zero. The term eccentricity comes to us from the Greek, meaning out of the center. In 1551, it was an astronomical term, meaning a circle in which a heavenly body, such as the Earth, deviates from its center. The term eccentric appeared in 1832 as a person with odd behaviors. Some of the characteristics that describe eccentrics, and which Wilford Wood of Bountiful, Utah possess, include idealistic, highly intelligent, obsessed with a hobby, opinionated, and outspoken. Eccentrics are unafraid of or influenced by the opinions of a crowd. Now, Wilford Wood was also a visionary in three ways as I see it. He purchased property in Missouri, Illinois, Ohio, Pennsylvania, that later became official LDS historic sites. Secondly, he collected historical Mormon artifacts that were put in his museum in Bountiful, Utah. And third, he claimed visions that have not been accepted by the LDS community because they are only appropriate for apostles within the church. This paper will give some details of some of those visions. Now, I'm leaving it up to you to decide whether Wilford Wood compares to an ellipse that's close to being a circle, or an ellipse that's flattened out very flat. Now, this is a photograph of young Wilford Wood that I took at the Wood Museum in Bountiful. Wood served a mission in northern states from 1915 to 1918. At this time, the mission headquarters was in Chicago, and the mission covered the states of Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, and in Canada, the province of Manitoba. It was at this time that Wilford Wood became interested in, while he was on his mission, in LDS church historic sites, because some of these sites are within the boundaries of his mission. This shows an older photograph of Wilford Wood. In 1956, when President Eisenhower was running for a second term, for President of the United States, Wilford Wood wrote him a letter, and he said, thank you.
Is that okay? Can you still read okay?
Yeah, I can read okay. Is that better to see the screen?
Yes, thank you.
Dear President Eisenhower, the special purpose of this letter is to invite you to fly to Utah and speak from the top of my most famous Hill Cumorah. I am closing a folder of the program where President David O. McKay spoke to over 1,000 people on top of this hill. If you would come, we would have room for 10,000 people that could both see and hear you from the top of the hill. President Eisenhower, as a small businessman without any help or knowledge from anyone else, I personally invite and plead with you to come to my farm and speak to the people of America. President Eisenhower did not come, and his secretary wrote a nice letter back, which said, the President has asked me to thank you very much for your cordial letter, with interesting enclosures inviting him to fly to Utah and speak during his campaign from the top of Hill Cumorah, located on your farm north of Salt Lake City. While your generous kindness and concern for his re-election are deeply appreciated, it is not possible to fit this engagement into his overloaded calendar. That same year, Wilford Wood wrote a letter to the television program called What's My Line. It was very popular back then. Some of us remember that program. And he says, I should be very happy to appear on your program, as I love each one of the panel, as well as John David. I have one of the most famous Bible collections there is. I am closing snapshots of some of these Bibles. I am a very, very bad-looking old man, age 63, but I am very active and drive to many parts of the United States, covering some 60,000 miles a year. In all my travels, I carry with me a Remington Rand razor. I believe the Remington Rand was the sponsor of the program. I keep my face shaved each morning until my skin is smooth as that of a great big peach. Should I win anything on this program, I should like to give one half of it to President Eisenhower's campaign, because he is a president who believes in the Bible and does not take the name of God in vain. The other half I would like to give to the Crippled Children's Hospital in Salt Lake City. Of course, Wilford received a... His proposal was not accepted. This is a monument outside the Wood Museum in Bountiful that I took. It shows the Angel Joseph Smith with the Angel Moroni receiving the plates. Lamar Barrett, who was a professor at Brigham Young University, used to bring his students up, his history students up to the Wood Museum to show the historical artifacts that Wilford had collected. And this is what Lamar Barrett says about Wilford Wood. He was a different kind of guy. Although he bragged a lot, I really appreciated him because he collected so many documents and purchased so many church history sites. He made some general authorities mad at him. But he had friends. President McKay went to Woods Cross and dedicated his place. We became very good friends. He appreciated me being a BYU professor that he had some trust in. His stuff was scattered from one end of his museum to the other. I don't see how he ever found anything in his place. He died in 1968. When I visited the museum here a few years ago, I didn't think it would be a museum. I thought it was just a storage unit of all these things. He died in 1968. About 2 years later, I asked Lillian, his wife, if she would like me to organize and file things properly, and she said yes. I went through all the documents, not artifacts, but letters, papers, and deeds. So forth. BYU did receive from the Wilford Wood Foundation $100,000, which helps church history research. Now, Lamar Barrett had the church history library photograph all these papers and deeds and so forth of his, and it resulted in 38 rolls of microfilm, which I have looked at all 38 rolls, not every inch of every 38 roll. But much of what I am giving today is from the microfilm this is a 1853 sketch by Frederick Piercy of the Nauvoo, Illinois Temple ruins. One of the greatest services that Wilford Wood did was the purchase of LDS historic sites. This shows a sketch by Wilford Wood of the Nauvoo Temple block, and you'll notice that there are 10 different parties that own the Nauvoo Temple block in 1937 when Wilford Wood started buying property there. And Wilford Wood was responsible in buying 7 of those properties. If you notice, it says every place it says LDS on them you can count them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 properties that he bought. Later, the Corporation of the Presiding Bishop bought this quarter block here from the Catholic Church. They paid $100,000 for that. Wilford Wood didn't pay anywhere near that much money for what he purchased. When he bought property, he sold it back to the church for the same price that he paid for it. He did not make any money on the property. Here is Wilford Wood heard that one of the lots was for sale. It was owned by the State Bank of Nauvoo, and they were going to sell it for $1,500. He consulted with the First Presidency and obtained authorization to offer up to $1,000 for the property. Wilford told the State Bank of Nauvoo, "Are you going to try and make us pay an exorbitant price for the blood of a martyred prophet when you know this property rightfully belongs to the Mormon people?" I felt the spirit of the prophet Joseph Smith in that room. Mr. Anton, one of the officers of the Nauvoo Bank, said, "We will sell the lot for $900. I grasped his hand, and then the hand of the cashier of the bank, and the agreement was made and signed. We parted best of friends. This is the Nauvoo Temple block in 1907 when Anderson took the pictures. Probably more like what it looked like when Wilford Wood was starting purchasing in 1937. The two-story Icarian schoolhouse was built from the Nauvoo Temple stone. This is Wilford Wood giving a deed for the purchase of the first property of the Nauvoo Temple block to Heber J. Grant, who was president of the LDS Church at the time, and David O. McKay was a counselor there looking on. Wilford Wood also bought other properties in Nauvoo, namely the Times and Seasons building here and the John Taylor home in Nauvoo. Wilford Wood got permission from the First Presidency and the Missionary Committee of the Church to call senior couples from the Bountiful area to go and serve in some of these historic sites. And some did serve in the John Taylor home and other places that he purchased. This is the Masonic Hall, or the Cultural Hall in Nauvoo. And when Wilford Wood first purchased this, it only had two stories. But originally it had three stories. And so when Nauvoo Restoration Incorporated restored this building, they put on the third story. That's me right there taking a picture of the cornerstone. My wife took this picture. This is a I copied this over at Carthage, Illinois, at the county clerk's office, Hancock County Clerk's office, and it shows the history of Block 20, which contained the Masonic Hall. You notice Joseph Smith's up the top there, and you notice that down here, Charles Mulch is mentioned, Arlene Mulch to Wilford C. Wood, and so on. And there's Wilford Wood to the Latter-day Saint Church, Latter-day Saint Church to Arlene Mulch. There was a lawsuit concerning this property, and the church sold the Nauvoo Masonic Hall back to Arlene Mulch for the same price they paid for it, with the provision that they could buy it back if she ever decided to sell. Now, Wilford Wood was not too happy about this, and I'll read some of the correspondence concerning that. I can't remember. Oh, yeah, that's the cornerstone. I'll talk about that a little bit later. Here's a letter from Arlene Mulch to Mr. Wood. "May I please take a few moments of your time to make my plea? I am very ill and crazed with grief over what I have done. I am unable to work, eat, or sleep. I will gladly return your money and reimburse you for your trouble, but I implore you to please let me keep my property. When I think of the years that my beloved father, whom you knew and respected, deprived himself of the necessities of life in order to hold the property which he loved so well. It was his life work, and he gave it all to me. I just can't give it up now. You represent a wonderful church and a great church and a great people, and I am only a lone woman begging for forgiveness for my great mistake. My employer insists that I go to the doctor, for I am so sick, but I know it is only my nerves and heart that is broken. Please do not feel that I have talked to anyone about this, for I have not. This can't possibly mean as much to your group as it does to me, for it is ruining my life. You are the only hope in this matter. I do not want money at this time. I only want to keep things as they were, have been. This has done something to me that I can't quite endure. You are husband and father, and I have neither. Please be kind to me. This may sound a little crazy to you, but you know that it is only after much persuasion that I finally agree. I hope and pray that with your generous heart, you will see how I feel and give me the help I need. The whole thing was wrong from the beginning, price and all. If the work has been started on the abstracts, I will gladly pay the charge if you can only let me get out of this. Sincerely, Arlene Walsh. And then the lawyer of Arlene Walsh from Keokuk, Iowa, writes to Adam S. Binion of the Council of 12 and says, "Dear sir, Miss Arlene Walsh was in my office this morning. We went over the entire history of the real estate transaction. We tried to pick up the most important features to determine how we could best arrive at some sort of a court agreement. However, there were two things that stood out so strongly that it is impossible for us to pass by. You'll recall when I talked to you, I continually mentioned the methods that Mr. Wood used to obtain this real estate." So, and the, as I said, the church did deed back the property back to Arlene Walsh, and an article in the local newspaper there in Illinois says Arlene Walsh regains real estate, Illinois real estate. Sued against Arlene Walsh against Wilford C. Wood of Salt Lake City, Utah, and others, was dismissed in court, circuit court, on Tuesday. At the same time, a deed was recorded which conveys property in Nauvoo from the corporation of the presiding bishop of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to Miss Walsh. This property was an issue in the case in which Miss Walsh sought to regain possession of a certain real estate she had deeded to the defendant, Wilford Wood. Real estate involved include the old Masonic Hall building, the cornerstone of which was opened last summer, shortly before the suit was filed. The stone contained historical articles, which are now in Salt Lake City in the possession of the Mormon Church. Reservations incorporated in the deed from the church to Miss Walsh include the right of the church to have the first opportunity to purchase the property if the grantee would ever offer it for sale, and the right to purchase for 6 months after the death of Miss Walsh. Now, Wilford Wood wrote a letter to Thorpe B. Isaacson, who is presiding bishop of the church, and he says, "I wish that you would take time out and let me show you the facts here at my office about this lawsuit over masonry. It is the most ridiculous thing to think to have Binion and Morris both say that it was because of my behavior and actions in getting this property that was the cause of the lawsuit. Nearly everyone seems to know a little bit about it, but few know the facts. It took faith, works, and answer to prayers of 7 devoted missionaries, as well as my wife and myself, and it was only the Lord that made it possible for that priceless treasure to come to the church and be delivered to the hands of President David O. McKay. It didn't need an apostle or a brilliant mind to give back anything to a woman. A deacon could have done that. especially when everything I did was legal, lawful, and done by the finest lawyers, judges, and state's attorneys of the state of Illinois. Well, as I said in that one article, this shows the cornerstone here and H. Helm was the Masonic Grand Master of the state of Illinois in 1843. A.L. means after light. And to get the A.D. date, you subtract 4,000 from 5843. This is a sketch that I made from a photograph. Since I couldn't get permission to have the photograph copied, I drew it of the cornerstone and the Masonic temple and the copper box. But the copper box was in the bottom of the cornerstone, and Wilford Wood almost missed it. And this is July of 1954. Wilford Wood delivers to the copper box to David O. McKay, and that I trace from what the image the microfilm made. Wilford Wood also bought other properties, such as the Whitney store in Kirtland, Ohio. Find my blurb on that. Maybe I should go back. Well, I'll jump ahead. What was in the copper box? Well, a lot of good things were in the copper box. One of the things it said is that Joseph Smith was not at the the dedication of the cornerstone because he was wanted by the governor of Missouri, and so he was hiding from the law. Wilford Wood also purchased the Whitney store in Kirtland, Ohio, and this is that what it looks like today. This is what Wilford Wood writes to a friend: "I now own not only the property where the Melchizedek priesthood was restored in Susquehanna, Pennsylvania, but last year I secured the prophet's home where he lived while they built the Kirtland Temple. These are my own personal property, which I shall keep from the destroying hands of the new non-profit church committee that has no sense of value for precious old originals that cannot be replaced. The non-profit organization spent church's millions in tearing down and putting something up today for today, but will be out of date for tomorrow." Interesting to note, Wilford Wood was not happy with what was being done in Nauvoo by Nauvoo Restoration Incorporated, making things look new. He would be called a preservationist, not a restorer. He liked to leave buildings as he found them and not make them look new. After Wilford Wood's death, the LDS Church in 1979 was able to purchase this from Lillian Wood, the Noah K. Whitney store. And the deed was signed, the title of the deed was signed by Lillian Wood, Mary Cannon, and Leila Glade. Mary Cannon and Leila Glade were Wilford Wood's daughters. He had two daughters. This is the John Johnson home in Hiram, Ohio, which Wilford Wood purchased. A little interesting story related to that. In 1956, he wrote to President David O. McKay. He says, "On March the 22nd, we drove to Hiram, Ohio, went to Hiram College Library and found Mrs. Joyce Monroe." She was the owner of the home. "We took Miss Monroe down to the bank in Garrettsville and talked to the bank. They said that the property in that section was worth $250 an acre. when we came back to the farm and went through the entire house, I bought some her mother's personal possessions, a large, well-preserved family Bible of 1824, old enough to have been used by the prophet when he was there and worked on the revision. All afternoon and evening we spent trying to get Miss Monroe to sell part of the land and building, keeping the stock and machinery. It was a farm, and the Monroes wanted to sell not only the home, but the machinery and cattle, and Wood did not want to buy it. And then they went to sleep up in the what he called the Revelation Room. She says, early in the morning, I was awakened as I felt a grasp on my right hand, and I was practically raised from my bed as I held on to the hand which had held on to mine. In answer to my prayer and supplication, the prophet Joseph Smith had come. He said, "Get your pencil and write." I sat on the side of the bed and wrote the following: "Miss Joyce Monroe agrees to sell to Wilford Wood all her land on the north side of the road, 160 acres, more or less, except 1 acre back of Cress's house and 2 acres already promised." Cress was her son. "All buildings on said land for $40,000. Miss Monroe may have the use of the farm and lands and buildings until January the 1st, 1957. The prophet said, "When you go downstairs, say nothing about the purchase of the property. Help them with their work, and when the council of mother and son is called together, let them speak first. Then read what has been written, hand it to Cress, not to his mother, and ask him to sign first." They went into the house and sat near the table and waited. Miss Monroe said, "Cress, have you decided to sell and keep the cows and machinery, as we talked about last night?" Cress said, "Yes, I guess we better." I asked Cress to sign it as witness. Miss Monroe asked me to read the part about the marker or monument, which I did. She intends to build across the street, and I did not want a high monument in front of the house. Miss Monroe signed. The monument they're talking about, Wilford Wood thought the tar and feathering in Hiram, Ohio, took place across the street, and he wanted to build a monument telling about that. That's why they're talking about that. I gave her a check for $1,000. Jack signed as a witness, and I signed. The property was sold, and I was the happiest man in the world. Now, most of Wilford Wood's visions I don't see a purpose in. I see a purpose in this. I see a purpose in this one because it calmed him down. He had a tendency to be too forceful. It calmed me down, and he was able to make the sale. So I do see a purpose in that. this is across the street in Hiram, Ohio, from the Johnson home, which Wilford Wood purchased. And he planted some trees there representing what he thought was the tar and feathering. A beautiful 1,000-foot square marking the place where the prophet Joseph Smith was tarred and feathered at Hiram, Ohio. Over 1,000 trees have been planted as a monument to the prophet Joseph Smith, a monument made by God, as only God can make a tree. After Wilford Wood's death, this property was given back to the Monroe family from who they had purchased it. I was told that by Carl Anderson, who lives in the Cleveland.
Does Carl Anderson say that was actually where
the tar feather? No, Carl Anderson has a different location than that. Carl location, he's given me a diagram of what he believes.
Tell us who Carl Anderson is.
Oh, Carl Anderson is, he was state president in Cleveland area. He's, I think, now a patriarch there. But he's sometimes called Mr. Kirtland for the work he has done. Also, Mark Staker has a diagram where he believes the tar and feathering took place in his book on Kirtland.
Are they different?
I haven't compared them that much. They have the same sources for for determining it, historical sources for determining it. But they're both different than Wilford Wood's idea. Now, Wilford Wood once held the death masks of Joseph and Hiram, and he had these bronze plaques, this bronze plaque made of that. I think they're the death masks. I think BYU finally got a hold of them. Is that correct? This is the first edition of the Book of Mormon that belonged to Wilford Wood. He would take a first edition of the Book of Mormon and use it as an autograph book. We all gasp when we hear that these days. Because first edition of the Book of Mormon, I think, for Goodman's running for $100,000 these days. But anyway, he did. Brian S. Hinckley's signature is there. That's the father of President Hinckley. David O. McKay's there. Joseph Fielding Smith. Heber J. Grant. You get these signatures from these people. I don't know if they're worth anything or not, but anyway, they're there. And he writes this there, too. October the 4th, 1946, on the banks of the Susquehanna River, Harmony, Pennsylvania, took this book to the foundation of the prophet's first home, where he finished the translation. Had it with me while the purchase of the property for the church. It was a great day, and Providence smiled on me. Wilford C. Wood. This is Wilford Wood with two of his grandchildren. Let's see, I think... when I took a tour of the Wood Museum, her name was Sheila Glade, was our tour guide, and she really loves her grandfather, really had a love for her grandfather. And anytime if Wilford Wood said something one way and church historian said it another way, she believed her grandfather was right in his analysis of church history. Here's what Wilford Wood wrote to President McKay in 1956. On the banks of Susquehanna River, I was shown and taught many things. No marriages for time shall be in the temple. I was very much impressed with the words of the prophet when I said that he visited this earth frequently. That he visited these historical places where the church was organized. These historical places were sacred, holy places, should be preserved, protected, and watched over with guides telling the true story of the restoration of the gospel in the last dispensation. That they should not be made public places of pomp and show. The prophet spent most of his time instructing and rehearsing the holy priesthood. It was my privilege to view and see reenacted the visitation of John the Baptist bestowing the priesthood on Joseph and Aubrey at the very place where they had received it. The visitation of Peter, James, and John to hear the prophet stand and point to the place of the baptism as well tell the restoration of the holy priesthood is beyond human words of expression. I was instructed to tell you these things. If it were not so, I would not do it. And here's Wilford Wood with George Albert Smith down to on a piece of restoration site in Pennsylvania. And this is Wilford Wood on the banks of Susquehanna River, pointing to the place where he believed the baptism took place. This is the Liberty Jail as it looks today. Wilford Wood was the first one to purchase the Liberty Jail and the home next door, which he used as an information center. And he took senior missionaries there, would instruct them and drive them out to their out to their mission. Usually, just in the summertime, he'd have missionaries there. This is Wilford Wood where he believed the Melchizedek priesthood was restored. It is about it's up on the hillside, outside of, above the Ronnie Christian Restoration site, about 4 miles up there. And he purchased this property. It's on the New York State, Pennsylvania border. He bought 125 acres. And he gives details of the restoration of the Melchizedek priesthood. He has Joseph Smith and Oliver Cowdery kneeling, with Peter standing in front of him, right hand on Joseph and left hand on Oliver, and James and John with their right hand on Oliver and left hand on Joseph. And he has the exact wording of what was said, which I won't read. I could, but I won't read for lack of time. And he sets June the 27th, 1829, as the date of the restoration of this priesthood. Wilford Wood, Joseph Fielding Smith, didn't care for Wilford Wood or his interpretation of history. And here is a letter concerning that. He, in 1967, a year before he died. In talking about the books, Joseph Smith begins his work, volume 22. He says, "They have never been out of print. President McKay did not stop the sale of the books at Deseret Bookstore. Without mentioning any names, this is what happened. The man who is supposed to answer all questions about the church in the improvement area is the man who stopped Deseret Book from selling the book. He has been a thorn in my side in almost everything that I have done historically. He cannot stand for people to hear the facts about the early history of the church, especially those things which he cannot answer." And Joseph Fielding Smith did write an article, Answer Gospel Questions, from 1953 to 1967. He was LDS church historian from 1921 to 1970. What is interesting, I bought copies of this book from the Deseret Book a few years ago. So they're back to selling them, I guess. Well, is my time about up for you? Okay. I have some one thing that Wilford Wood did.
It's 15 minutes.
Yeah, 15 minutes more. Wilford Wood took RLDS President Wallace Smith to the open house at Los Angeles Temple, which I thought was kind of neat. I would like to conclude by saying that that Wilford Wood's heart was in the right place in his purchase of historic properties, but sometimes his personality and boldness was not too helpful, as in the example of the purchase of the Nauvoo Masonic Hall.
We do have a few minutes for. Can you hear me? Am I speaking over the mic? We do have a few minutes for questions, and I get to ask the first one. So, Taylor, could you flesh out just a little bit for us the circumstances under which this lady was willing to sell the Masonic Hall?
Well, he would show up at her work and have a piece of paper for her to sign to sell it. I don't want to say. Arlene Mulch's father said they owned a lot of property in Nauvoo. Sell the Masonic Hall last, because it's the most valuable. And that's all Wilford Wood wanted to buy was the Masonic Hall. And then Charles Mulch, which was her father, had died by this time. And Wilford Wood told Arlene that Charles had appeared to him in a vision and said that she was to sell the property.
Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Where did he get his money?
He got his money from FERS. He started trapping foxes, and then he raised mink, and then he started buying furs in New York City and other places, and he had fur storage. He stored furs, so that's how he made his money.
Right here?
Oh, no.
This gentleman over here probably answered some of my questions, but I thought I'd ask you as well. I live out in that area where the museum is, and I just wonder what might be the future of that property, what is happening to it. And the second question is, when I go by every few weeks and I see, I think there's crosses on top, aren't there three crosses, or is that just my imagination?
I don't think I know the answers to your questions at all.
Okay.
It's in Bountiful. When I toured, there's three buildings there. The big round building I've never been in. He called that Telstar. That was the Telstar building. And I understand there's Angel Moroni is in there. A statue of Angel Moroni in there, but I don't know. I haven't been in there. Yes, you have a question back there?
Wilfred Wood suspected that in Harmony, Pennsylvania, actually called it, it's now Oakland, right?
Yes.
It's
yes.
Open now.
Yes.
That there was a place to build a temple, and which doesn't, there's really no evidence for that. My understanding is it's actually an old schoolhouse. But did you do any research? Did you find anything out about that?
Yes, I did. I have visited the site. On an old map, 1870s map, it says First Mormon Temple. It's up on the hill there. I think it was a school, supposed to be a school. The Wood family purchased that property. Wilford Wood purchased that property. And my understanding is they still own it today. And they pay taxes on it.
But there's no evidence that
was the First Mormon Temple.
Unless Moroni or something.
No, there's no evidence that it was the First Mormon Temple. Yes.
What was his church biography? Had he went on a mission, you mentioned.
Yes.
Had he been a bishop, state president, anything?
So the only thing I found out, he was Sunday school president in his ward. I did find that out. He... whenever they had a stake meeting, he always had 100% of his faculty at the stake meeting. He was a persistent kind of guy. On Father's Day, he would bring in David O. McKay to speak. On Mother's Day, he might bring in Sister McKay to speak. He liked top people to come to his ward. I don't think what else I can say about him. Sunday school president. Any other questions? Yes.
Do you know what other properties in Nauvoo she owned?
He owned?
Yeah. Arlene Mulch.
Arlene Mulch. She owned about 100 acres, I think, from the Masonic Hall down to the Mississippi River. And when the church bought it, 20 blocks, I think, in Nauvoo, the church paid $250,000 for that property, all their property. There's a lot of property there.
And Taylor, I wasn't sure that I understood what you said when you were reading his quotation about the restoration of the Aaronic and Melchizedek priesthood. You used the word reenactment.
That's the term that Wilfred Wood used.
Did he see? Did he wish to communicate that he had seen a vision of the bestowal of these two priesthoods?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
Did he?
I have the exact words here. Really,
okay.
Okay.
That's what I concluded, but I thought that's interesting.
He said,
did he explained why he felt the Melchizedek priesthood was restored on the 27th of June, which of course has other significance in Roman history.
That's what Joseph told him. That's all I can say.
Okay. Thanks.
Yes.
Didn't he have Baal up in the mountains above Salt Lake there?
A Baal?
A bunch of organs.
In his museum. Yeah, in his museum he has organs from the Salt Lake Tabernacle.
But he never had a vault with those up in the mountains.
A vault? Well, he has a vault that he stored furs in when in the mountain there.
Oh, okay. So he may have church stuff in there as well, right?
I think the vault was for storing furs. I don't know of anything else. Yes.
How many visions did you say he had?
Visions?
Yeah.
About. I don't know if I can't count them. Charles Mullis appearing to him. Vision of the Rhine priest, vision of the Melchizedek priesthood. And the purchase of the John Johnson home, a vision there. Let's see. Buddy Youngren told me about a vision that Wilfred Wood told him about, but I've never been able to verify that vision. And Buddy Youngren was so disturbed by it, he went down to see President McKay, and President McKay's secretary, Claire Millamis, said, David O. McKay will talk to you about the good that Wilfred Wood's done for the church, but he won't talk to you about the other stuff. Yes?
Did you say
Wilfred
Wood
Yes.
A lady asked in the front, where did he get his money from? And you mentioned the furs. He must have been extremely wealthy if he, in those days, you know, 50, 60, 70 years ago, that he could go out and buy all these properties and then have the church reimburse him. And then you mentioned that his widow donated $100,000 to BYU, was it?
Yes.
They had to be extremely wealthy people.
Their property is in the Bountiful area, and that property is worth a lot of money. And I think that, I don't know if it sold much of it, but that's probably part of it, selling the property there. In the Mountville area.
You go running the Cadillac, Gary. All over the Midwest in his Cadillac.
Well, he didn't like to fly. That's why he drove 60,000 miles a year in his car to go buy furs and so forth. And when he was buying furs, he would stop at his historic sites. He put advertisements in papers, like in Susquehanna, Pennsylvania, and Nauvoo, Illinois area, for historical artifacts he was looking for. And he was subscribed to papers too. Yes?
You know, what's interesting when you brought up about the cornerstone, when Arlene Mulch received the property back, she did not receive the copper box with the contents, correct?
What they did is they copied the contents and put it in a new copper box, and they kept the originals in Salt Lake.
Right.
Okay. And they put a second copper box above the cornerstone, which had documents of the 1950s.
And that was after they gave Arlene title back. Or was that after Nauvoo restoration?
Well, no, I think they put the cornerstone back before they sold it to
Arlene Mulch.
Arlene Mulch. It's about the same time.
Okay.
Taylor, could you just comment briefly on President Monson's sort of tribute to Wilfred Wood that he did maybe 3 or 4 years ago?
The Mormon Historic Sites Committee honored Wilfred Wood here a few years ago because of all the properties that he purchased. President Monson came and talked at the presentation. The Wood family was there, at the presentation. I was not there. Someone sent me a copy of the program because they knew my interest in Wilford Wood. When Wilford Wood's books were being printed in Salt Lake City at the Deseret News Press, he wanted his high priest form to come and guard the presses, so make sure. So I don't know if it ever happened.
The hips gets a little flatter.
So anyway, President Hinckley invited the Wood family to come to the dedication of the Nauvoo Temple, and several members of the family, I think some women of the family, went back to the dedication of the Nauvoo Temple because of his purchase of the property there.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate your visit. Thanks to you, Taylor. Yeah.